This is Under the Microscope. I'm Raymond Tungekar. We're all familiar with evolution, but have you ever really thought about how new species form? I mean, really considered it. I got to thinking about this after hearing about an MU study into how a certain type of tree frog came to be. And so I spoke to two of the researchers.
Yes, I'm Carl Gerhardt, Curator's Professor of Biology, University of Missouri, Columbia.
My name is Mitch Tucker. I'm a PhD candidate at the University of Missouri. I study the evolution of the acoustic communication of gray tree frogs, Hyla chrysocyllis and Hyla versicolor.
So there's two frogs that they study. One's a pretty standard species, and the other?
The eastern gray tree frog.
Has a little quirk. It has twice as many chromosomes as the normal frog. That's actually how it branched off and became a new species. And the thing is, there's no way to tell both frogs apart just by looking at them.
No, I mean, I think there's probably some people out there that, you know, they're like, yeah, I can tell my chrysocyllis from my versicolor, but it's highly unlikely that you'd have any idea what species it is just by looking at it.
And the only real way to tell them apart is through their calls. The normal frog has a faster call, and the eastern gray is slower.
So the more chromosomes, the lower the trill rate.
A great comparison is a fast-talking New Yorker compared to Southern Georgia drawl. Saying the same sentence, saying the same word, just the words come out of the mouth at a slower repetition.
And here's the question Tucker and Gerhardt wanted to find out. How is the eastern gray ever able to even survive as a species? Because organisms with different chromosome numbers normally can't reproduce. And if they do, they usually will produce sterile offspring. That means that when the earliest members of the eastern gray branched off and became a distinct species, it was absolutely necessary for their survival that individuals had a way to identify and mate exclusively with others that had the same number of chromosomes. Which brings us back to their call. Gerhardt wanted to find out whether an increase in chromosome number would automatically result in a different mating call. So, in an experiment done several years ago, he created a group of normal tree frogs with three chromosome sets, one more than they usually have. And what he discovered was that the speed of the male calls
decreased by about 12 to 14%, and that was in the direction of the eastern gray tree frog.
So the addition of an extra chromosome set made normal frogs sound more like their four-chromosomed cousins. But would female frogs respond to that new call?
So in here, we're in the anechoic testing chamber.
To find out, so Tucker took normal female frogs with an extra chromosome set.
Set it right in the middle of our two speakers. Oops, there's one right there.
And tested a series of artificial calls.
It totally sounds very artificial to human ear, but apparently the tree frogs don't mind.
One was slower and sounded more like the calls of the eastern gray, while the other was faster and was closer to normal frogs. And what he discovered was that
not only was the repulse rate preference different, but it was different in the direction that it, quote-unquote, needed to be in order for them to stay as a species separate from their parents.
Now just imagine you're a female eastern gray lounging by a pond. Now, you're vastly outnumbered and surrounded by frogs of a closely related species, but if you mate with them, it would spell the death of your own. Now, what's amazing is that the event that started your own species, the doubling of your chromosome number, not only changed the calls of males, but also allows you to cut through all the noise and find a compatible mate, and gives your species a fighting chance at survival. And this whole process of chromosomes doubling, which is called polyploidy, Tucker says we might not be here without it.
A lot of people say that polyploidy isn't relevant and it's an evolutionary dead end and it doesn't contribute anything to the diversity of life. But if you look at our own history, we've gone through multiple, I think at least two rounds, possibly three or more rounds of polyploidy that, you know, it's evidently done well for us.